One of the concepts that we always harp on a lot here is inverse discrimination. When you use the keyword discrimination, you think a large population discriminating against a tiny, small one, either because of their religion, their race, or any handicap whatsoever. But we do not speak about inverse discrimination, which is when a small minority illegitimately takes over so much power that they can discriminate against the vast majority of the rest of us.
And it's true if Argentina and America and Europe or any country is going to be a true nation of human rights, you will design and you will develop a system that will make sure that those bright young men and women who aspire to success in their lives and academia success and business success and success in their companies rise to their ability.
Yes.
And if you don't have that, you don't have human rights.
Exactly.
Question, key question, asked it before. What is your take on the Ukraine, what's happening in Ukraine? There is also an important Zionist influence from Israel. They right now have a Jewish president, Mr. Pyotr Poroshenko. What's your take on that?
Well, I look at Ukraine as one of the great tragedies, really, in terms of my life.
You live there. You've been there.
Yes, I've been there, and I have so many friends in Ukraine. I've got friends on both sides of the equation. A lot of the Ukrainians fought against the Bolsheviks, you know. During the Second World War. And then you have other parts of Eastern Ukraine. The Bolsheviks actually had a program of moving in non-Ukrainians into the country as a way to lessen their patriotic opposition to the Bolshevik control, the Jewish control. But here's the situation. The Ukrainians could have solved this issue themselves. Their president was an elected president. He was more toward the Russians than he was toward the EU. But he was duly elected. And Ukraine, if this would have been allowed, if the Ukrainians would have been able to solve their own problems without the EU coming in, Ukraine would not be divided today. There would not be this war. And this is the last thing we need, is a war of European peoples killing one another. We don't need any kind of war, but we sure don't need a war of another European war. I believe the reason for this, overwhelmingly, is because the Jewish Zionists worldwide don't like the Russians because they've stymied their position in the Middle East. For instance, they've supported Assad.
Exactly.
I've been to Syria. I've met with it. Again, we have so many Christian viewers of your program. You know, how many people now with the Zionist-controlled media of the world, you don't see this on CNN or BBC or whatever, know that all of the 4 million Christians in Syria, practically every person, man, woman, and child, supports the government. How many people know that most of the Sunnis in Syria, they support the Grand Mufti, which is the most famous Sunni leader? I met with him as well. He gave me a beautiful copy of the Quran. The Christian gave me a beautiful copy of the Bible. And how many of you know that they support the government? How many people know that the Assad government is a secular government? It's not a radical Islamic government. Well, Russia has supported Assad. Whereas the Jews, or the Jewish interest, not every Jew, again, there are even some anti-Zionist Jew, but the Jews as a body around the world have hated Syria, and they wanted civil war because Syria was supporting the Palestinians, because Syria supported the Lebanese, which also defeated the Jews in a war, Hezbollah, and because they all work together with Iran, which the Zionists see as their enemy. So for that reason, they've supported this horrendous civil war in Syria. And for that reason, they're trying to punish Russia, punish Putin, and truly, in a sense, punish the Ukrainians, because this war and this division of Ukraine is not good for the Russian element of Ukraine. It's not good for the non-Russian element. It's divide and conquer.
However, if
I love both peoples. I just love the Russian people, and I love the Ukrainian people. In fact, a very special person in my life is part Ukrainian and part Russian, and it's such a shame to see what's going on.
You have the best of two worlds, then.
Yeah, and she's a beautiful lady too.
Absolutely. Now, this brings us very, very interestingly, as you said, Vladimir Putin did draw a red line on Obama in September 2013 in Syria. Now, how does immediately thereafter Islamic State appears, or ISIS, or however you want to call it, What is Islamic State? Who's behind Islamic State?
Let's talk about
that. That allowed the United States to bomb Syria, to bomb Iraq?
Well, this is something that you and I go back now 3 or 4 years. And as you know, you've been following my writings and my radio program. I have been, it seemed like the whole world is like caught ISIS by surprise. I've been telling the world for 4 years that we were supporting the radical jihadists.
Right. The freedom fighters.
America was supporting al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda. Now, what kind of sense is it for the American government to support the people supposed to be our biggest enemy, right, al-Qaeda, in Syria? But we've been doing that.
John McCain, for example.
Yeah, the only way...
Militant.
And, of course, the only way that makes sense when you understand the fact that the people who run the American foreign policy are the Zionist Jewish extremists, right? And they don't care about that. All they care about is the fact that Syria is their enemy. Mm-hmm. And so we've been talking about this for a long time. And when in fact, I was in Syria 4 years ago, met with many wonderful people, as I said. And Syria was one of the most peaceful, beautiful countries. Damascus is one of the oldest civilized cities
in the world.
And it is a wonderful country, and now they've had so much pain and suffering. So ISIS has come about for two reasons, in my opinion. ISIS has come about because, first, that we have supported them physically with weapons and guns. We've tried to weaken their natural enemy, which was Assad.
When they were called freedom fighters, right?
Exactly.
A year ago, year and a half ago.
And by the way, all this thing escalated. There weren't huge numbers of prisoners or whatever in Syria years ago. When the revolution started, when the fighting started, that changed. But Syria was not a terribly repressive state. It was, it's a difficult state to govern because it was a state of many different ethnic groups, different religious views, both Shiite and Sunni, Christian and Muslim. Alawite and these other tribal Kurds and other groups. And by the way, that's another thing that I believe. I believe that most states that are the healthiest states are states of one people. If you have a people of a common, just like you have one great thing going for you in Argentina, and it's going to help you in your struggle for your own freedom, is you're overwhelmingly people of a common European ancestry,
yes,
and you have a sense of unity and a friendship. And that's going to be a great thing for you. If you got massive amounts of immigration, whether it be from Israel or whether it be from Africa, or whether it be, this is seeds of element. And like the Charlie Hebdo is a perfect example of that. The reason you're having terrorism all over Europe today, there's two reasons. One is you've had massive immigration of non-Europeans into Europe.
Who will not blend in.
People are different. This isn't a bad thing.
Just
Vive la difference, right?
If we use the French.
Vive la difference, you know? That's, yes, and if you bring people of a very different religious view, different racial background, different cultural background, and you're making a witch's brew because people get angry. If the United Nations did a study of the biggest civil wars and internal conflicts of countries, and they said that over 80% of them were conflicts based on ethnic issues.
Of course.
So, you know, again, it's not racist to recognize this. The truth is, it's racist not to recognize. It's not to recognize, say, that Argentina is a Spanish Christian country and should have a value system where the people can enjoy this commonality.
Exactly.
This
we're
tradition.
Not a Muslim country. We're not a Buddhist country. It's a Catholic,
and America,
basically a Catholic.
You know, in America, and this might shock your Christians, this hasn't happened as much here yet as it's happened in the United States. But in America, for 150 years of our existence, at the White House, they've made a manger scene, a beautiful scene of Christ Jesus, you know, and a scene of love and brotherhood, Christ being born for all mankind, but part of, because America was 90% Christian country, right? And now, because of the Jewish influence, and they've led all these court cases, and they've also been in the federal judiciary, they're one-third of the Supreme Court now.
Where we have our menorah.
Yeah. They have banned the Christian, even Christmas, you can't have a Christmas cross, you can't have a manger scene on a city hall or
we've
a city
had some ground. Stuff like that here, too.
You know, but and they were the ones, it wasn't the atheists that got this done, it was the Jewish extremists that got this done. And now they put up on all public ground, they have thousands of them all over America, they erect Jewish menorahs. The Jewish menorah is the symbol of what they celebrated Hanukkah, which is a symbol of a Jewish military victory against the Greeks, which is basically our European ancestors, massacring the Greeks. And it is a symbol. You go to Jewish material and they'll say this is a symbol against assimilation. This is a symbol against Jews intermarrying and mixing. However, imagine in Argentina if, say, the Germans and the French and the other groups said, we're not going to, I will not allow us to marry together. And everybody would say, well, those narrow-minded people, right? Because we're all European. But this is a celebration of Jewish racism. Again, these are words we have to start using. Jewish racism, Jewish supremacism. Again, we know that we've all seen examples of white racism. I've been called to white racism. I was in a controversial group as a young man. I've grown up like all of us do. But, you know, and white racism, if white people oppress others, try to hurt them or harm them or exploit them, that's wrong. And it's just as wrong if any other group does it. Jewish racism.
It's just as bad as white racism
or
whatever.
And the truth is, it's not, you know, like America, you still see very vicious anti-European propaganda all over the world, like the Ferguson thing. You know that police officers shoot down white people more often than blacks, even though white people have much less crime rate. That's the truth.
But the headline goes for...
And why is this? The reason why is because, and they do this, now this is going on in Argentina too, it's going on in Europe. Listen, there's nobody who has more respect for nature and more respect for Indian people than I do. All people of the world have a right to exist and to live and to prosper and to be fluent. But right now in Argentina and in Europe, they try to make Europeans hate themselves and feel guilty. You know, most of Argentina didn't have huge numbers. The people that are coming in right now to Argentina weren't even originally in Argentina. Spanish came before they did, really. But they want to make Europeans
feel guilty.
Feel guilty.
Yes, sir.
They don't, you know, they sure don't want Jews to feel guilty for slavery and their role in slavery. They don't want the Jews feel guilty for the war and the wars against Palestine. But they want to make you feel guilty as Europeans, because they know if you're proud of your heritage and you love your heritage, you're more likely to stand up for your freedom and your traditions. And your
do you believe that, just a question, do you believe that this immigration or emigration from Africa or from the Islamic States or Arabic States that goes to Europe is because it's inducted by this supremacy that makes them mixed and lose their heritage? Or is something that happened because there are terrorism in their countries, because there are intolerance, because there are economic problems? What do you believe is the cause?
A very astute question and an important question. And the truth is it's a combination of these factors. The truth is we've been going around the world, and the people have gone around the world for ages, but we have never had massive immigration to Europe or America, you know, in terms of non-Europeans. There's no question about it. The Jewish supremacists, and again, I'm not saying all Jews, but I'm talking about the organized Jewish groups, they have absolutely been behind the immigration policies in Europe and the immigration policies in America, which are devastating. I'll give you an example. America, when I was 20 years old, America was 91% European America. In fact, when you looked at America, you'd say that like a European country. And America was a vibrant country. We had a lot of unity. We had very low crime rates. We had a great deal of sense of unity. They purposefully came in and have changed that demographic as a divide and conquer strategy. In fact, they themselves use these words of divide and conquer. They know that a conflicted society, whether it be in Europe or America, it's conflicted with all these different groups. They know that they then can stand above them all. They get all the whites hating the blacks hating the whites, or the whites hating themselves. You have to realize, for them to take over America that David Brooks talked about in the New York Times, for them to take over, and they say they do, they brag they've taken over, what did they have to do? They had to get rid of the European people. And the truth is, if you look historically, and as I am a historian, there is so much hatred in them against the European people. Not every Jew hates the European people, but they talk about how every European country has, you know, been anti-Semitic, all the crimes. They hate the Russians people. The reason why the Bolshevik Revolution took place is because they hated the Russian people. And to take over the Russian people, they had to import all these Jews and then try to fool the Russians with the idea of nothing to break but your chains, getting the Russians to fight one another. The intelligentsia of Russia, the aristocrats of Russia, the business people of Russia, and the workers that fight themselves while they took over. This is the modus operandi of the world. So yes, they were behind this. Now some people say, well, why then would they let in the Muslim groups? Well, there's no argument about that because they have let it. The leading organizations in America, like the biggest immigration organization in America, is called the American Hebrew Immigrant Society. The American Jewish Committee has been fighting to open the borders to America, open the gates for, believe it or not, for 100 years. They finally succeeded in 1967. That's why America is transforming. In Europe, it's the same exact process going on right now. They have led it all. And by the way, most of the people of Argentina are Spanish. You recognize your Spanish heritage. Few people here in Spain knew who opened the gates of Seville and Toledo. Or do you know as a Christian who opened the gates of Constantinople? Not once, but four times, according to Jewish histories. What's going on now is their revenge against Europe. Just like the Bolshevik era was a revenge against it. Now, I've got to say something else about it, too. Russia was on the move to change anyway. The revolution that took place in the 90s wasn't necessary. It was coming about. They initiated it, Gorbachev and many other Russians.
In the 80s.
You see, the Russian people, long before 1992, had already overthrown communism. It was still called communism, but there was more free enterprise. They taught people morality, beauty. They had great academic institutions. They removed the Jews from the echelon of the. So that's why you had a Cold War. You had a Cold War because by the end of the Second World War, and as this transition took place, the Russians gain control. The only way they could get back control over Russia was have a scattered, horrific chaos.
Mafia.
And then they came in, and of the 14 Russian leading oligarchs in Russia who stole now 45% of the Russian natural resources in that country, the richest natural resource country in the world. They did this in 3 years. Of the 14, 13 of them were Jews. And that's why you had this revolution. They influenced Yeltsin. In fact, we even talk about one guy, Summers, this Jewish head of Harvard, who's also put the Jews.
Summers.
Yeah, he was over in Russia helping Yeltsin, you know, because they had this control puppet to give the country to these Jewish banksters and criminals.
And as a little anecdote,
the guy who destroyed Argentina's economy, first under Menem and then under President de la Rúa, was one Domingo Cavallo, and he too wanted to go to advise Yeltsin on how to run the economy.
He's so former
economist.
See,
yes.
Now you know why I spent this time at my expense to come here. Because you can tell your fellow Argentinians every day about what's going on like this, but they kind of think, oh, no, this is just Argentina they're doing this. What's going on here is going on in Brazil. It's going on in Colombia. It's going on in Mexico. It's going on in the United States. It's going on in South Africa. It's going on in Argentina, every country of the world. New Zealand, everywhere. And I'm just telling you, just open your eyes. You have a foreign minister of this country, just like we have a foreign minister. Britain, when Britain got involved in the Iraq war, which was a war for Israel, it was not a war for oil. There was no oil gotten from that war. It was a war against the man that they hated.
The New American Project for a New American
exactly.
Century.
Exactly.
Yes, sir.
The guy that led them into that war was Jack Straw,
right.
Their foreign minister in Great Britain. The guy that controlled Blair was Levin. Right. Levy, actually, Lord Levy. And in America, Obama came in. People thought he was an African-American. He certainly couldn't be controlled by Jews. It was run by David Axelrod. Rahm Emanuel was his first chief of staff. Rahm Emanuel, he's an American guy, next to the president, the most powerful man in America, because he determined what the president would even see.
Chief
right? This guy, he served in the military. You know what? But he didn't serve in the American military.
Yes,
he served in the Israeli military.
We got many of the community going to Israel to serve.
I want to take advantage of the last part of our interview, which is so very interesting. You've been in Argentina now for
right.
2 weeks, and you've traveled around a little bit.
Yep.
This is your first time here, I understand?
In this first country? Time.
Your views, your impressions.
Well, I tell you one thing. The first thing I got to say, and it's kind of a funny thing to say, but I love your steak.
Yeah.
You got great meat
no
here.
No surprise.
But I tell you, truthfully, the most important thing that I've met, I've never been to a country where I felt the people were warmer, more giving, sacrificing. I mean, people, it's a long ride out to the EZ airport.
Oh, yeah.
People go out all that way to pick me up and take me back, and it's been it's been sacrificing. I was hosted by some people in Bariloche, and they were so amazing. They treated me like I was one of their sons. Of course, they read my books. I guess they felt like they knew me pretty well. And everywhere I've gone, I mean, we've gone into shops or restaurants, the people have been so wonderful and warm. And I've always, you know, I've read a lot about Argentina. I also read a lot about Juan Perón and Eva Perón. And actually, believe it or not, even though I know there's different opinions on Eva Perón was one of my heroes as a young man. And even though there's different opinions about Juan Perón, I saw him as an American, anyway, as a patriot. At least
absolutely.
The guy that was standing
absolute
up
patriot.
For his country.
Absolutely.
And did he do everything right? No, but he sure was a patriot. And boy, don't we need it. We all need that. All people on earth need that. The truth is that we never should go to war against each other again. But the diversity of the earth, this is beautiful.
Yeah.
And the diversity of your country, its own unique heritage, is so fantastic. And I love this country, and I love your people, and I feel very honored that you would invite me to come here to speak and to appear
honor.
In this program.
Listen,
I'm honored.
One question, see what your take on this is. We
yep.
have in our team, one of our Spanish-speaking experts is a gentleman by the name of Hector Juliano. You'll be
yep.
meeting him later. He speaks about the foreign debt. Argentina's key problem for the last 40 years, 50 years, has been a huge, artificially generated, unpayable foreign debt, which conditions everything. Now, President Mrs. Kirchner did not heed a court order from the United States that we had to pay to some vulture fund, NML Elliott,
yeah.
run by one Paul Singer
right.
and another one run by one Mark Brodsky, mm-hmm. that we had to pay the $1.3 billion. So we were really put in very much, the heat was placed on us and on the government itself.
Right.
Now, two of the key people that have made a lot of hullabaloo in the Washington Times and in the New York Times and on CNN and Fox News are two U.S. representatives, Mark Rubio and Ileana Ross Litanen from Florida. Now, they are both financed by Paul Singer, and
yep.
they are the two key spokesmen about Argentina should be, sanctions should be imposed on us, government officials should be declared persona non grata, and a whole host of other rubbish.
Have you ever seen the movie Usual Suspects?
Yeah.
Why is it always the same usual suspects?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, I'm getting to what you want. And it is the same usual spot. I'm telling you, it's this way all over the entire world. It's the usual suspects, except maybe some parts of remote China, maybe, or something. But here's the thing about this debt, all right? This is what I would do if I were you. And I don't mean to speak for you, but I'm just telling you my view as if I were an Argentinian.
Very important.
And I speak for the view of the Argentinian people here. I would say this is what I would do. I would find out the section of the debt, in terms of the money that was lent by Argentinians in terms of their own pensions, their own companies, their own businesses, their own personal people. If they put money into the banks, they should be paid back. So anybody that legitimately invested in Argentina
should get their money back.
Should get their money back.
Absolutely.
But all the rest?
Well, let me say something.
All the rest? Well, cancel the debt.
Let me say something for the English-speaking audiences.
Yeah.
One of the things that we, when I say we, a whole group of people, not just the people on this channel, but a whole host of patriots in Argentina we have been fighting for over the last 40 years, is that Argentina's foreign debt, which began under an illegal military-civilian regime from 1976 onwards, that foreign debt should be investigated. An inventory should be carried out. Right. What do we owe? To who and why? And if we do that, we'd say, okay, this is legitimate debt, we're going to pay it back no matter what. This is doubtful debt, we're going to investigate it. And if we find criminal debt, we're going to repudiate it. However, every time anybody tries to do that, the whole press say, oh no, we're going to fall off the planet, we're going to fall off international markets, it's going to be chaos, the sky is falling, etc.
What are they going to do to you? You don't get much foreign aid from any country.
No.
So what are they going to do to you? You think they're going to stop trading with you? Of course not. If it's in their advantage to trade with you, they're going to trade with you, right?
Absolutely.
And when countries the size of Argentina begin to do this, that's going to cause the whole dominoes to fall. So
they're scared of that, like Greece now.
Now, the second thing you've got to do is that you've got huge arable land. You've got so much parts of Argentina which are extremely wealthy in terms of its natural. When I traveled the country, and I even looked out the window of the airplane, I saw so many grasslands and so many. I mean, you could support a population of a couple hundred million without any problem at all.
Please.
More than that. And still have plenty of space. And what I would suggest is you should bring in, a lot of Europeans now are looking for, bring in hardworking people, do some homesteading out here in these vast areas. But Patagonia should not be the new Israel. Patagonia is a place that you should totally develop. And you should bring Europeans in and give them like America did. Give them land grants. That if the people want to come there with their family to set up a homestead, to farm, to create businesses and all that, give them some land. And to Argentinians that want that as well.
But you know that, adding to what Adrián was talking about, there was a patriot called Alejandro Olmos. He fought 18 years suing the military coup for the foreign debt that they acquired. And he fought during 18 years. There was a sanction, a resolution by the judge by the year 2000 that demonstrated that there were 377 illegal procedures which invalidate the foreign debt by them. That resolution was sent over to the Congress, and the congressmen
they put it in a drawer, and it's never been opened ever since.
Well, as you know, then I was
because a lot of envelopes on the table.
You probably have a few people in there who are trying to do what they can do, but you need new parties. You need, and also infiltrate the ones that are going. You need political movement, movement for a truly new Argentina, a new day for each of you, to wipe away the old. I mean, you need to revitalize everything, your bridges, your schools, your streets. This should be like every young person should get involved in this project, this greater Argentina. And I think also you need to look and see what categories where Argentina can make money, because you have a lot of resources, first off. And make sure that none of these resources are exploited, that these resources are the resources of your people. You need a real national bank, a true national bank that lends money without interest or very low interest for the book work, right? For companies that have proven themselves, individuals who've proven themselves to work and produce, and jump out of this whole interest system. This interest system is, you know, a robbery. It's a con.
That is a trap. I have one more question. What it's
we're we really talk all night. I don't care. I'm enjoying
it. Yeah, because he runs the show.
It's
so
great being with you.
Next year, the
returns. I run the show.
As long as you want me here, I'm here.
Next year, America's having presidential elections. Yeah. Will it be Hillary Clinton versus Jeb Bush? My God.
What a disgusting
scenario. That is horrendous. That is horrible.
Well, you know, you got to remember it this way. It's always been. It's been horrible as long.
Sheldon Adelson.
For my lifetime. I mean, people don't know this. I mean, people had a lot of hope when Obama came in, but there's no reason for the hope. You know, Obama's biggest corporate contributor in America was Goldman Sachs. And I think almost any intelligent businessman in Argentina or well thought of person that knows the news knows that Goldman Sachs is the biggest criminal bank on the earth. Now, they were the biggest corporate contributor for Obama, but guess what? They were also one of the biggest for John McCain when he ran. And then the next election, they were the biggest for Romney, and they also contributed to Obama. Goldman Sachs, this whole country has bankrupted Greece. And I guarantee you, one of the reasons why Argentina is in the financial situation you're in today with your peso is because of Goldman Sachs. No question about it. So, yeah, you've got what you really need. And this is a hard thing for me to tell the people, but I teach this to every country and every people. You need true revolution. And by the way, I'm not talking about a violent revolution. Violent revolutions are passe. In fact, they're almost impossible today anyway, because modern electronic surveillance and modern weapons and so forth and satellite, you really can't plot for that kind of thing. But you know what you can do? You can do things like this television program.
Exactly.
And you can, with your genius and ability, and this is what we talked about earlier. In fact, I'm glad we got to this point. It's a good final point to talk about. As you probably know, all the big media corporations are going bankrupt. The big newspapers are going bankrupt. It's coming here. It hasn't come here yet. But in my city of New Orleans, again, it's like this all over the world. In my city of New Orleans, our paper was the Times-Picayune, which was bought in the 1960s by the Jewish family, the Newhouse family. In Louisiana, we used to call them the Jewhouse family. And they kept on as their editor or one of their official people the old guy that used to be with them, but he didn't control the paper. It was a New York Jewish newspaper, okay? Now, because of the internet, and because of modern videos and all the fact that you can now print all you want to print for nothing and get it all over the world in seconds, they're now printing the paper only 3 times a week. I have more views on my online thing than they have on theirs. So, my videos, we are now, if people go to davidduke.com, you can get my videos. My video YouTube site has 10 million views by itself. It's got an over 90% positive rating. So people, you see, if they call you a hater or a racist or an anti-Semite or whatever they want to call you, if that's true, then people will listen to you and they'll say, oh, he's a hater or he's an anti-Semite. They don't. They go to my site, millions and millions of people, and they listen and they say, this is true. This is honesty. It's goodness. He represents good thoughts, kindness, love, human rights, not bad things.
Remind our viewers your website.
It's davidduke.com. And the last video I did recently was called CNN, which is for the media, Goldman Sachs, and the Zio Matrix of Power. Now, this video was actually recommended by leading doctors of the world in Lancet. Lancet, of course, is the biggest medical journal in the world, read by many doctors right here, obviously, in Argentina. And these other doctors went and saw my video. They said, this is a great video, wonderful video. It's so true. In fact, they were European doctors as well as some Asian doctors, you know, people all over the world, and said, this is the truth. This video on my channel alone now has almost 800,000 views. The rating, which is a YouTube rating, is 96.5% thumbs up, positive.
These people actually watch it. They like
the interesting thing is that because I've given thousands of lectures at universities on media, I do a daily talk show, international, which is wonderful because now like your program, it's not simply broadcast to Buenos Aires, you put it on the internet, anywhere somebody can connect up with a computer can see the truth you offer here. And I want to promote this show too. I think it's a very good program today. And the interesting thing is that if you go to YouTube, and I challenge anybody listening out there watching this outside, go to YouTube and just put David Duke in parentheses, in quotation marks, because it takes out the Duke, takes out the, it's got to be together. And now on YouTube by itself is 65,000 videos. At least 60,000 of them are my videos, are my speeches, my lectures, and everything. And we had two professors who took 1,000 at random. They added up the views of the videos. They added up the popularity of the videos. They came up with 500 million views.
So the message is getting out there.
And over 90% positive ratings. There's not very few movies get 90% positive. So we are changing the world, and that's how you change the world. You change the sentiment of the people. And there'll be someday, I hope someday there'll be people like yourself. People like you, my good friend Adrian Salvucci. What a treasure you have in this man, you listeners at home. And I know he's going to be embarrassed for me to say this, but you have an incredible person here that you're so lucky to have. Support this man. Give him your help. But one day, you're going to be out in the streets, all of you. And with this great work you're doing on television, too, because you may have more of an impact than him, because you're taking the messages and you're bringing it to the masses. One day, you'll be out in the streets of Buenos Aires and Bariloche and every other city, and there'll be millions of people saying, we're not going to take this anymore.
Exactly.
We're going to be free.
Howard Beale.
We're going to free our country.
Yes, sir. Definitely. Indeed. Very good.
We're going to have that.
Very good.
We need that, too.
Well, I believe that's coming. And it can happen with the blink of an eye, historically.
Exactly. Because these things, technology will make them.
I could have never believed 5 years ago that I'd have 500 million views on my videos with over 90% positive rating.
Something is happening.
Dr.
People is awakening.
You know that this is your home. We hope to have you back in Argentina in the not-too-distant future once again, and we can continue doing these shows, and we can even do some shows via Skype, which is also
to have a good stay and enjoy one.
The message has to be, you know, okay, this is a Spanish-speaking country, this is a Spanish-speaking channel, but as you say, technology makes it possible for anybody anywhere in the world to hear us, and we are speaking, this is very interesting, English is by far the most important language globally. But second most important in the Western world is Spanish.
There's
550 million people. It's all of South America. The Brazilians speak Portuguese, which is very similar to Spanish. They can understand us, we can understand them, and you have Spain. So, you know, the message is really getting out there a lot, and we're really very thankful for you coming to visit us, and I'm personally very thankful to you for having me on your show as often as you do.
Oh, you're great.
And we've got a lot of stuff.
Our people, let me tell you something, folks at home. Our people listen to him. They feel he's not only brilliant in the Spanish language, his English is such, and the power of his spoken word is such that people all over the world tell me we need him more on. He's such a fantastic, wonderful speaker. You have a treasure here. And I want to close by saying one thing that I need to say, a couple of things. My last words of wisdom is to people, if you get angry and you feel like you want to do something stupid, like something violent, don't do it.
Obviously.
That's what your enemies want you to do.
Exactly.
They control the media, no matter even if it's going against somebody who's killing other people. If you do something like this, you're going to hurt yourself, hurt your cause, and they'll demonize your cause. Terrorism, you leave that to the Jewish Mossad. You leave that to what they're doing. You know, you people, you know, be honorable in your life. And love your people. Love all the people. I mean, I know many Jews I respect and honor. But that doesn't stop me from fighting these Jewish extremists who control the Jewish people and dominate the Jewish people. Because if you have hatred in your heart, you're going to be eaten up. Just truly, and also, by the way, I know there's a lot of people listening who have lots of money, and some people don't have so much money, right? But really love your people. I hate to see it when successful men and women look down upon the poor and the struggling. You know, lift them up. You got to all be lifted up together.
Absolutely.
Dr. Duke, thank you very much for sharing with us this program, and I hope you have an enjoyable staying in Buenos Aires and all over Argentina.
I love your country.
We hope to have
you
again.
Beautiful, and I wish this country freedom and hope and love and success, and I believe it will happen.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Have a good stay, and we hope we do something together in the future.
You got it.
And a good trip back home.
Adrian, thank you very much for sharing this program.
My pleasure. I think it's a very good program. We will be posting this, well, obviously in English, and we're going to be putting the Spanish subtitles. So
sure. Yeah, you need to put it up on YouTube, too, and we'll put some links for it.
Definitely we will do. Thank you very much to all of you. This was a special program in English. Excuse my English. But we had an extraordinary program just to have a view of this supremacy, of this type of life that we have to face in the future. And it takes to our responsibility to take to awake and to take control in our lives, in our countries, in our values, and in our destiny. We'll see you again next special TV 1. Thank you for sharing with us. Good night.